Well, before we get too deep into our talk this morning, I do need to give you a disclaimer. And the disclaimer is this, that we're not going to end on a happy note this morning. So I know some of you like to walk out of the service going, I like to have my warm and fuzzies for the Sunday, but I'm not going to offer you very many warm and fuzzies. Hopefully, you know, I mean, maybe you'll have some, but if you don't be shocked. Because where we're at in our story this morning, it is not a happy ending where we're going to end it. And that's okay, because, you know, there's great stories that don't always have a happy ending. You know, Star Wars Part II, Empire Strikes Back didn't have a happy ending. The first Infinity Wars Avengers didn't have a happy ending. But so we'll get there, but this morning, this is just where we're going to be this morning. We're just not going to end necessarily on a happy note or on a good note. So that's my disclaimer, but hang with me. Because you know what? Life isn't always happy, is it? No, right? And so we shouldn't be shocked when it's not always, you know, roses and butterflies. So that's my disclaimer this morning. What I want to talk about first is, you guys know what karma is, right? You guys want to talk about karma? Karma is you get what you've been given. Karma is this idea that if bad things are happening to you, you must have done something bad previously or in a previous life to deserve or earn the bad things that are currently happening to you. Or if good things are happening to you, you must have done something very good in a prior life to really get the good things now. So that's karma. And as Christ followers and Christians, you know, and people who don't believe in karma necessarily like that, we do believe that you reap what you sow in some ways, but it's easy to kind of from a distance poke fun at it or throw stones at it. But if we're honest with ourselves as Christians or Christ followers, we have our own kind of version of karma. I would call it the Christian karma. And Christian karma goes something like this. Doing things God's way will result in good things coming my way. That if I just do what God wants me to do, if I stay faithful, if I am obedient, then good things will eventually come my way. Like, I should expect God's blessing in my life if I am faithful. Obedience equals blessing, and kind of those kinds of ideas. And there's a level of truth to that, right? There is a level of, and I don't think, there has to be a level of truth or we wouldn't believe it at all, but I think there's a level of truth of, yeah, if you do things God's way, it is better for your life, right? Not committing adultery is better for your marriage than committing adultery. Like every time. That's just a guarantee, right? I mean, so there is a level of truth to that. But what we're going to discover this morning is this. Doing things God's way is not a guarantee good things will come your way. It's just not. It's just not a guarantee. There's not a one-to-one correlation between being obedient to God and God giving us the things that we want out of this life. And so this morning, I want to give you an example of that in Scripture. We're going to look at a part of the story that we're looking at in a bigger story that really just shows us the reality of that statement, that doing things God's way is not a guarantee that good things will come your way. And the caveat, though, is this, at least in the short term. At least in the short term. But it's the short term that we live in. It's the short term that we get focused in on. It's the here and now, what's happening to me, what's happening around me now is what we get locked into. And so it's the short term that we tend to just fixate on. And when things aren't going good in the short term, that's when we begin questioning God's goodness, God's character, God's faithfulness, all those kinds of things about God. We kind of go, God, what's up? I've been doing what I'm supposed to do. Now, where are you? What's, you know, your part is supposed to show up and make my life better, make my life easier, make my life more comfortable. And when that doesn't happen, then we can, you know, question goodness and character of God and all those things. But this morning, we're going to look at an example that just kind of shows that's not always the case. And so if that's you this morning, if you're in that season of life or you're feeling that short-termness of life where things aren't going my way and I've been trying to be faithful, you're just going to be in good company this morning because that's the story that we're going to look at. So we've been working our way through the life of Moses. Moses is perhaps one of the most influential leaders and just people in not just biblical history, but just in history. I mean, his writings, his teachings, things of that have shaped the Western civilization more than what we really probably realize. But Moses did not always start off. He didn't start off as this great leader of men. In fact, we were introduced to this idea of Moses last week, that God comes to Moses and he reveals himself to Moses, and he reveals himself in a very interesting way. It's through a burning bush, and it does not consume the bush. There's a fire that God is in, but he does not consume the bush. And we talked about how that is really telling of who God is, that God doesn't need anything. He's self-existent, self-sufficient. But God reveals to Moses a name, his name, a name that Moses has never heard before of God. He says, what? What's God's name? I'll let you guys participate a little bit. What's God's name? Huh? What? What kind of name is that? Isn't that a most ridiculous name? I am who I am. Like, that's not a name. Like, give me a name. What's that all about? That is where we actually get our phrase Yahweh. I am who I am. It means I will be who I will be. It means to basically Moses, don't put me in a box, Moses. Don't think that you can have me figured out. Don't think that you can take a human body and an animal head and pop them together and that's your God. I am not like any God that you've ever seen or experienced before. I am who I am. There's no way to liken me to any other God, any other creature on it. It's just I am completely separate. I am self-sufficient, self-existent. I am who I am. I will be who I will be. And God, the Yahweh God, tells Moses, here's my plan for you, Moses. I'm going to send you back to Egypt. And remember, how old is Moses at this point? 80 years old. Are you kidding me? He is an old man. His life has been spent. He has come and gone. He's working for his father-in-law still as a shepherd out in the middle of nowhere. He is a nobody at this point. But God says, I am sending you back to your birth land, back to your people to rescue them out of Egypt. In fact, here's what God says to Moses. He says, so now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. And here's how this Mr. Heroic, the greatest, one of the greatest leaders of all time, responds to God's calling. But Moses said to God, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? God, I don't know if you noticed, I'm 80 years old. I'm a nobody. Who am I? And so this kind of exchange we looked at last week, back and forth of Moses going, no, you got the wrong guy. And God's going, yeah, I got the right guy. And Moses is like, no. And so God says, fine, let me give you some parlor tricks to help you out as you go down there. And so Moses, I want you to take your staff, throw it down. It turns into a snake. He puts his hand in his shirt. He pulls it out. And it's all like, because it's all like crazy looking, diseased. And that's really an unfair trick to Moses, but I'm sure he was shocked by that. And he says, there's the whole blood and the Nile thing. So he gives them some parlor tricks to say, listen, I'm going to be there with you. I will help you. I'll give you some of these things so to show that I'm speaking, to you and all those things. And then Moses, again, Moses, great leader, finally says, God, no. In fact, he says, please send somebody else. You don't understand. You got the wrong guy. Isn't there anybody younger, anybody a little bit more enthusiastic, anybody a little bit more of a somebody in Egypt at this point to do what you want them to do? Who am I? Who am I? And you can imagine, and it tells us God gets angry at this point because God, like you all, like you've read the story, who've heard the story, know how it goes. It's Moses is the right guy, and God knows he's the right guy. And so Moses gets angry, but he's so gracious to Moses, says, fine. Listen, I will get your brother. And this is comical, because how old is Moses' brother? He's actually 83, okay? He's 3 years older than Moses. I will get your brother. I will speak to you, Moses. Moses, you speak to Aaron, and Aaron will speak to Pharaoh, and Aaron will speak to the people. And finally, Moses says, fine. So, to me, every time I read this, this is more comical. So here is 80-year-old Moses with his wife and his son and a donkey, right? Donkey, on their way down to Egypt. Can you just picture, how many rest stops, or, bathroom breaks do they need to have down to Egypt? But here is Moses with his staff in hand, walking alongside his family, headed to Egypt, not knowing what was going to happen. And then God says, by the way, Moses, by the way, and here's what he says. When you return to Egypt, see that you perform, before Pharaoh, all the wonders I have given you the power to do. So here's Moses walking, I got it, the staff thing, the hand thing, that was funny, God. And I'll do those things. I got it, God. And then God says, but wait, I, I got one more thing to tell you. But, I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. So you can just picture Moses walking, and I don't know if the wife can hear Moses talking, you know, and to God, or, you know, I don't know how this all goes down, but you can just picture Moses kind of walking and starts laughing. And you're like, God's like, why are you laughing? Because I just thought I heard you say, this must be my 80-year-old ears. I thought I heard you say, you are going to harden Pharaoh's heart and you are not going to let the people go. Isn't that silly, God? I mean, because clearly that's not why we're going down there, right? Because we're going to go down there to let the people go, right? That was a funny one. Wasn't that funny, God? What did you really say? And God's like, no, that's what I said, Moses. Honey, can we stop for a second? What? You got me to come down here and now you're telling me you're going to harden his heart and you're not going to let him? Why am I even coming down here, God? Honey, hold on a second. What? I'm having a moment here. What? Can you just imagine what Moses is thinking at this point? Like, that seems so backwards. God, you know, I thought we were going down to release these people. What do you mean you're going to harden his heart? I mean, if anything, God, if you can harden his heart, I don't know, I have an idea. Why don't you soften it, right? I mean, can't I go down there and you can just like make Pharaoh's day like the best day ever and like just make him like, you know, just so soft of heart that when I get into that room, he's willing to say yes to just about anything. God, doesn't that sound like a better idea? Harden his heart? Are you crazy? I'm going back. You know, what is with this? And for some of you, this is where you struggle, like with Bible stories like this. And you're like, is this how God works? Does God actually like harden people's hearts? I mean, that doesn't seem very fair. I mean, at all. I mean, I know Pharaoh's not the nicest cat in the world, but what chance does he stand if God is hardening his heart? I mean, who can hold that against him if God Almighty is the one hardening his heart? That just doesn't seem fair at all. Now, this is the first hint of what God is going to do to the Egyptians. This is the first hint, the foreshadow of what we would call God's judgment on Egypt. And I know we're not very comfortable with the idea of God's judgment. But one of the things that makes God so complex is God's justice, that God is just. He makes that clear throughout Scripture, that God is just. And God is just and demonstrates that justice in many, many different ways. Sometimes I'll pay back the bad guy. Sometimes I will pay back the good guy and restore what, you know, the bad guy took from the good guy, like the story of Job. But in most cases, what God does is maybe even scarier than all that. God's justice is fine. You don't want me. You won't have me. That's God's justice. God says, fine, if you're turning your back against me, if you're walking away from me, fine. You want something else besides me? Fine. I will give that to you. And that really is the picture of hell. Hell is just the absence of God. God says, fine, you want to spend your life walking away from me, turning your back on me? Fine. I will let you have that and see how that goes for you. That's God's judgment and maybe the most severest form. In fact, if you read Romans, Romans 1, Paul says this is how God's judgment works. He says he gives us over to our desires, and he says, fine, if you want that besides me, I will let you have that, but watch out, those desires will end up just consuming you. And to me, that is like the most frightening thing for God to say, fine. And so, what you need to understand, Pharaoh's life does not take place in a vacuum. You know, Pharaoh has spent his life rejecting the works and the power of God. And so it's not like Pharaoh's this innocent person here. Pharaoh's heart has been hardening all along this way, and God finally says, fine, you won't want me, you won't have me. That's just the way it is. And he, in a sense, hardened his heart that way. And so Romans 1 is a great example. Go home and read it. It's very powerful. So God warns Moses. This is just, to me, it's hilarious. God warns, hey, you're going down there, And I know your plan is to do the whole staff and hand thing, but I'll tell you my plan right now. It's to harden Pharaoh's heart. But Moses decides, okay, you know, and then the reunion happens. Aaron and Moses in the story, right? And I don't know when the last time Moses saw his older brother Aaron. It could have been decades and decades and decades. And I'm sure it was very powerful. And Moses was like, you'll never believe what just happened to me kind of thing with the burning bush and the hand and the snake. In fact, Aaron, why don't you put your hand in your cloak for a second? Tee-hee-hee, ah, you know, kind of thing. Got your brother. And it was just a fun reunion. So here that is, 80-year-old Moses, 83-year-old Aaron, team geriatric, headed down to Egypt. Are you kidding me? With a donkey, a wife, and a son, about to take on the most powerful empire the world had ever seen at that point. I mean, this is just crazy. And so Moses and Aaron go down. Here's what happens next. They get to Egypt. So Moses and Aaron brought together all the elders of the Israelites. So now there's a room, not just two old men, there's a room full of older men that they're talking with now. And Aaron told them everything the Lord had said to Moses. And he also performed the signs before the people, right? Check this out, guys, you know, and watch this. Ah, and they're oohing and aahing, they're going, ew, yuck, and all that stuff. And it says this, they performed the signs for the people, and they believed. They're like, this has to be of God. Like, this is not just two old men making up stories. And when they heard that the Lord was concerned about them and had seen their misery, they bowed down and they worshiped. In other words, they bought into this. I mean, if you were Moses and Aaron, and if you were the leaders or in leadership, I mean, this is great. They bought in. Now you got a following. Now you got people saying, we believe your story. We believe you. We're going to follow you. Their hearts were soft. Their hearts were bowed towards God. I mean, it went perfectly to plan. Way to go, Team Asper Cream. They are on their game at this point. I got a bunch of old person jokes today, okay? So the meeting was a success, but that was the easy part, to convince their kind of own people. They have to now go to Pharaoh. Afterward, Moses and Aaron, and we're told earlier that it wasn't just Moses and Aaron, but it was going to be the elders too. So it was a room full of these older men approaching Pharaoh's throne, right? Afterward, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go. You guys, say that with me. Let my people go. You guys want to sing that song? No. That's the Hollywood version. Okay, this is the Hollywood version of the story, of the Ten Commandments, of Charlton Heston version, let my people go. This is not the full statement. Some of you think this is what Moses said, let my people go. Good job, guys. You guys are spot on there. Let my people go. No, this is not. Let's check this out. Let my people go so that, what? They may hold a festival to me in the wilderness. Moses and Aaron and the elders come to Pharaoh and say, we want you to not free us out of bondage forever. That was not the request. The initial request was to let our people go out into the desert for 3 days and to worship God. That's what they were asking. The whole reason for the plagues, the whole thing, you know, about everything after, really came down to this idea of, Pharaoh, would you just let us go and worship God? Now, why would they ask this? I mean, that seems like not the right request. If I'm coming down there, I would say, Pharaoh, let our people go, period. Just let us be, let us go, not to go worship for 3 days, let us go. Why is the emphasis on worship rather than just freedom, period? And this gets to the heart of what not just this story communicates, but I think throughout the biblical narrative, the whole story, it's this. Only when we worship, are we truly free. Only when we worship are we truly free. And what do I mean by that? I mean, when God created us, he didn't create us just to want to worship. He created us to need to worship. Like, he created us as worshipers. In fact, one of the definitions of worship that I've given over the years is this. Worship is mankind's natural response to greatness. It's the greatness. Whether that's God's greatness or something else, we're just attracted to greatness, and when we see it, we ooh and ah. And if we're not worshiping God, we end up worshiping something else, and that's why we ooh and ah over sports figures, movie stars, fame, money, whatever it is, we're just natural born worshipers. We have to be worshiping something. That's just in our DNA. That's just who God created us to be. And God understood that Israel would never be free. They would never truly be free until they, in a sense, rediscovered who their God really was, until they came under his umbrella and began worshiping him. They could have been freed from Egypt, but have been enslaved to so many other kind of lowercase g gods. They needed to be free to worship God, free to be what God created them to be. And just because it's Memorial Day, I just want to pause and talk about worship, because we're going to talk about worship more later on in the next few weeks. But worship is so important. And in our country, in our culture, we take it for granted, don't we? I mean, we just take it for granted. And I'm not wanting to pick on anybody this morning. I have nobody in mind. But when you take something for granted, eventually you will lose it. When you begin to undervalue something, you begin to lose it. And, you know, when we get here to worship on Sunday morning, it really is a privilege. And, you know, we notice, and I'm not picking on, again, anybody, I don't have any, but we notice people don't come for the first song. People show up by the third song, and we're going, oh my goodness, you guys are missing out. What a privilege. I mean, the band has worked so hard. We have these freedoms people have sacrificed so that we can come and worship together. And here people are showing up just at the very end. It's like you've missed out. And so again, I'm not trying to beat anybody. I'm just saying, hey, let's take advantage of what we have here and not ever lose sight. In fact, I say it this way. We may be free to worship, but we are most free when we worship and when we worship together. And so that's why God says, I want you to go out to worship. Then and only then will you be free, free from everything else. And we'll get back to that idea later on. And so they approach Pharaoh with this idea. And Pharaoh's, this is this historic classic response. You've maybe heard this before. Pharaoh said, who is the Lord? Like, who is this guy that you're talking about? Who is this God that you're talking about that I should obey him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. This becomes the question that God is happy to answer for the rest of Exodus. God says, you want to know who the Lord is? Ha ha, great. I will show you who the Lord is and why you should obey him. But he's not asking this question because he's an atheist and doesn't believe in any God. I mean, you know, Pharaoh and Egypt, they were polytheists. They believed in many gods. In fact, Pharaoh thought of himself as a god. And so he's just basically saying, listen, I have my own gods. Why should I believe in your God? Why should your God be better than my God and obey, you know? And he's just saying, come on, guys, you are wasting my time. In fact, the king of Egypt said this, Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from their labor? Right? Why are these elders here anyways? They should be working. Get back to work, guys. Come on. Then Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you are stopping them from working. Do you know how much this is costing me? Just this little meeting here of work? You know, come on. You expect me to let this large labor force just walk out of Egypt free for 3 days? Do you know the kind of cost, the overhead that would cost? Come on, Moses. You are wasting my time. Wasting. But because you all have apparently have enough time to come make up this story and come to my, you know, throne and waste my time, apparently you have time to kill on your hands. In fact, Pharaoh came up with this idea. He said that same day, because that same day, meaning I didn't have to think about it. He's so hot, he didn't have to ask anybody else about it. He just says, I'm just making this decision. That same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and overseers in charge of the people. You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks, let them go and gather their own straw. But require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce their quota. Now, anybody, any brick makers here? I mean, nobody makes bricks anymore, right? Somebody else does that. We don't do that. I mean, somebody does brick making, but you don't have to be a brick maker to understand this is important. This seems important. We may not know why this is important, but it's important. Straw. And I'll tell you why it's important. Straw gave two things. Straw gave bricks a level of strength that you wouldn't have without it. It's kind of like rebar in concrete. If you ever do concrete, you need to put rebar in to strengthen the concrete. Straw gave it support. But not only that, straw quickened the process to dry. So you can make more bricks with straw in a day than without straw. So here's Pharaoh saying, take the straw away, guys. That way their bricks are going to crumble and they have to redo it, you know, and start over, and then it's going to take longer and it's just going to be harder. In fact, he goes on to say, require them to make the same number of bricks before, don't reduce the quota. Why? They are lazy. That is why they are crying out, let us go sacrifice to our God. They're lazy. I mean, if they want a vacation, come on, they're lazy. Come on. No one gets a vacation here in Egypt. Let's make it harder for them. Make the work harder for the people so they keep working and pay no attention to lies. These are just lies. And they're lazy. Now, do I really think Pharaoh thought all these people were lazy? I don't think so. I think Pharaoh was trying to do something. I think Pharaoh was trying to create a wedge between Moses and the people, because I think Pharaoh is probably a pretty good political, you know, mind at this point. I mean, he's a pretty good chess player, I imagine. So he knew if I could just pin Moses against the people, that this would all go away. And so that's what happens, you know, they take the straw away. But it's interesting who gets beaten in all this. It's the Israelite foreman who get beat, not the actual workers. It's the foreman who gets beat. And so the foremen go to Pharaoh and say, Pharaoh, what gives? I mean, you know, we're not the brickmen. We're just overseeing this. And you took the straw away from the people. Why are we the ones getting beat? And here's Pharaoh's response to the foreman. Pharaoh said, lazy, lazy. Don't you wish some of you could call your employees just lazy, lazy. That's what you are, lazy. That is why you keep saying, let us go and sacrifice to the Lord. You're just lazy. Now get back to work. Come on. You will not be given any straw, yet you must produce your full quota of bricks. And I love this next line. The Israelite overseers realized they were in trouble. Trouble. This is not going to go well. So imagine if you're just an Israelite for a second. Normal Israelite worker, just doing your thing, and you realize, you know, this is going to change everything. I mean, here's two guys, Moses and Aaron, walking into town. Two old men have this incredible story. Yeah, they have some cool, you know, magic tricks they're doing. And your hope was up. I mean, your hope tank was just filled when you heard about Moses and Aaron and what God had said, and he was concerned. I mean, you're just on, you know, cloud nine. You're thinking, this is amazing. This is great. God's finally going to get us out of here. My kids won't have to serve their grandkids. You know, my grandkids won't have to. I mean, this is perfect. This is great. And then suddenly you hear, no, 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 no. You're not going, and by the way, no straw for you. No soup for you today, right? No. It's like, what? It'd be like, you know, students, it'd be like if your teacher said, listen, I want you to write a 10-page paper tomorrow, and you're going, great, okay, 10-page paper, how are we going to do that? That's hard. And then, oh, by the way, you got to create your own paper. You can't go buy it. You'd be like, what? We've never had to buy it or make it before. We always went and bought it. What do you mean? You know, whatever. You know, we can't do that. You figure it out. Go figure it out. I mean, how much stress would you feel on that one? And here are these Israelites going, this was hard enough already. We were slaves, but we were making it, you know, manageable enough because, you know, the human bodies can adapt to so much. But now this is crazy. Imagine the pressure of having to worry about how's food going to get on our plate tomorrow because there's no straw. I mean, the demand for straw just went from zero to I mean, come on. Where are we going to find straw? How can we afford it? What are we going to do? I mean, this is just getting worse and worse and worse. Life has gotten harder since Moses and Aaron showed up. In fact, who do you think they were going to go blame about this? Who would you blame if you're the foreman? I'd go find Moses and Aaron, right? Well, Moses and Aaron end up finding them. When they left Pharaoh, they found Moses and Aaron, right? And they come to this meeting, and you can just picture Moses and Aaron going, hey, guys, how'd it go? And here's their response. May the Lord look on you and judge you. You can just see the laser eyes, just like this finger waving. What are you doing to us? You have made us obnoxious to Pharaoh and his officials and have put a sword in their hand to kill us. Moses, don't you understand what you've done? Pharaoh has been looking for ways to get rid of us, and now you've just given them the ultimate reason. Now you've just given them another reason just to not just beat us down that much, but to kill us. You're going to kill us with this, Moses. There's no way we can do what Pharaoh asked us to do. Now, I don't know what Moses thought at this point. I don't know if Moses is going, you know, like, This is why I didn't want to go to Egypt. I don't know if he was surprised by all, I don't know. But if you were Moses, where would you turn? Where would you go if things weren't working out for you? I mean, you've been obedient. I mean, the Israelites have been obedient. They've done everything. They've followed Moses. They believe, they trusted, they worship. Moses has been right on every step. But it hasn't worked out. Who would you turn to? And Moses turns to God. And here's what Moses says. I love this. Why? God, why? 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 Lord, why have you brought trouble? This word trouble means like evil. It's so harsh. It's so ugly. Why have you brought so much trouble on this people? I mean, you said that you came to rescue them. Now you've only made things worse. I have made things worse. Why? And I love this. Is this why you sent me? Is this why you sent me, God? Like, are you trying to pay me back too? Are you just trying to, you know, get back to me, this whole idea of karma? Yeah, I killed an Egyptian a long, long time ago. Are you just trying to pay me back on this one? Is this why you sent me? Just to bring all this trouble upon me? Why have you done this? Why have you sent me? Because ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on this people, and you have not rescued your people at all. You haven't kept your promise, God. You said you're going to rescue. They've just gotten worse. It's gotten harder. Now, have you ever felt like that? Have you ever felt like that? Where it's like, God, I have done A, B, and C just as you have told me to do. But I'm looking down the road and it just looks like a long line of just uncomfortable, difficult, challenging, painful experiences ahead. Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. You know, some of you left your job. Some of you maybe left your job because you felt God was leading you to leave your job. Like you just felt this was time to get out. You felt that impression, you know, and so you did. You left your job, but you don't currently have a new one yet. Like that door hasn't opened. You're going, God, what are you doing? I thought you were going to bless me with something. Now I'm still waiting here. Life has gotten harder. How am I going to pay for the bills? I felt like you were telling me to leave. Some of you felt like God was calling you to Dayton, Ohio. And you went, what? Dayton, Ohio? No one's bucket list includes Dayton, Ohio. But okay, God, if you're calling us to Dayton, Ohio, clearly, you know, you must have something good in store for us. And you've gotten to Dayton, Ohio. But life hasn't gotten better since that decision. Life has seemingly got worse. I mean, you haven't been able to sell your other house. You know, the kids haven't adjusted. It's been harder, not easier. And you're going, what are you doing, God? I thought if I did this, you would do that, and you haven't done that. So, you know, what gives? Some of you have made a decision financially, maybe with your spouse too, that you just said, hey, we're going to be more open-handed. We're going to be more generous than ever before, and we're going to just give more than we've ever before. And so you've done that. You've made that sacrifice, but it hasn't made life easier. It's made life financially harder. It's more stressful. Now you have to have these more arguments, you know, about with your spouse, about spending because you're giving more. And it's like, I didn't think this was going to work this way. Like, God, what gives? You know, I could just give you list after list after list of things that we do thinking, like, if I just obey, then things are going to go my way. And if it doesn't, I mean, how do we respond? I mean, the question is, how do we respond when we do what God requires and life gets harder? How have you responded, if that's you? I mean, we have two different ways, right? We could do the Moses, Aaron, Israelite. We could complain. We could say blame and, you know, God, what are you up to? This is so unexpected. Or, and we could do the Christian karma thing too, right? Doing things God's way will result in good things coming my way and just go, God, when's my good way coming? Come on. Or we could exercise our faith muscles. Or we could recognize this is a chance to go, you know what, God? I'm putting you over my comfort. Because see, the Israelites, that was their issue. They're saying, you know what? We'd rather have the comfort than have the freedom. We'd rather have the comfort than you, God. We'd rather just keep doing the slave thing rather than actually trust you and see what happens with that. But see, here's the thing I just want you to know this morning. Because I know there's so many TV evangelists and so many things saying, hey, if you just do this, this, and this, it's all going to work out for you. You know, the health, the wealth, the cars, the houses. But here's the reality. Obedience to God may lead to actually worse circumstances in the short term. That's my downer this morning. That's the wonk wonk, right, in the short term. And I understand the short term can feel like a long time, and some of you are in that right now. But let me just encourage you to hang in there. Let me just encourage you, stay faithful, stay obedient, stay in the marriage, stay committed, stay. Do what God has called and is calling you to do. Because at some point, I love how God responds the most. At some point, this will happen. He says, now you shall see what I will do. Now you shall see what I will do. You had to go through that difficult season, that short term, which maybe feels like a long time, but eventually you will see what I can do. See, when I got out of seminary, I had this expectation, thinking, I just gave my life to God here. I just went into debt so I could study theology. And I thought God was going to bless me right off the bat. God was going to give me this great job, great opportunities, and all those kind of things. Because why wouldn't he? I've just given myself over to being a pastor for the rest of my life. Okay, God, let me have it my way now, you know, kind of thing. And then God said, nope, I'm going to not give you the job that you wanted. In fact, you're going to be stuck in Winona Lake for a year and a half. You guys don't even know where Winona Lake is. It's just a small little place in Indiana. I mean, you know, and then I get a job here. But it wasn't easy. I mean, great people, but it wasn't easy at the beginning. It was a hard road for a few years. And I'm going, God, what are you doing? I gave my life to you, in a sense, to do whatever. And now you're just making it harder. What are you doing? God says, just trust me. And now I get to go, now I get it. Now you shall see what I will do. I mean, my wife and I mean, we were going, what are we doing here for a while, right? I mean, we were just going, what are we doing? Do we get out? Do we stay in? It was tough. Now you shall see what I will do. And we talk all the time. It's amazing what God has done. But I don't know when now it will be for you. It could be tomorrow. It could be 3 years from now. It could be 30 years from now. So my encouragement is just to hang in there. God is good. God knows what he's doing. He has a plan. You have to trust him. Stay faithful. It's only going to make things worse if you don't. Just trust God, okay? That's the best I can give you this morning, because it's going to get maybe worse before it gets better. But stay faithful, because we serve a big, big God.